Hello, everyone. This is Gruesome Herzog. My very special guest is director, producer, actor John Russell Kring. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gruesome. I guess this is the fifth time is the charm. This is the one, absolutely. Yeah, you and I have known each other through Facebook for a really long time, and actually, you did one of my first reviews of one of my horror movies that I had. So this was it's great to finally actually be talking, if not face to face, screen to screen.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, we'll get into that movie very shortly, but I also want to say thank you for coming on. It's crazy how time flies, man. 13 years and rolling. So wow.
Well, you're one of the first. I mean, I just imagine how many people started podcasts and they were like, "Yeah, this is going to be my career," and then they end after like 3 or 10 or what have you. And you're probably what are you in the triple digits at this point?
I'm at 2,000 reviews.
Oh, holy Toledo! My
And
goodness.
about 275 interviews.
That is amazing. That is amazing. That is, quite the accomplishment. And I definitely would be fascinated by, somewhere down the line, there needs to be a Gruesome Herzog podcast about the Gruesome Herzog podcasts of the past.
It's funny. It's funny you said that because when I first got started doing this, it's like, independent films was just about starting. It's about 2009 where you can, get independent movies sent to you or whatever. And I started my podcast solely based on no budget, low budget films because they need to be recognized as well because there's a lot of good ones out there. So that's how it got started. And then it just blossomed. It's like, distributors give me films, there's time, like I'm like 30 movies behind right now that I can't seem to get caught up fast enough because, you work for a living, you got to try and make time with family. And now and then I'll go back and listen to a review that I did like 13 years ago. And I said, damn, that sucks. I hate that. Compared to how I'm doing them now, it's like, oh God, it sucks. In reality, it was good back in the day, but technology changes,
It's all
and everything always gets better.
yeah it's it's all a process. My first 13 films were part of something called the Extraordinary Film Project, and the idea was that could I make a feature film every month? So that's what I was trying to do. It was we ended up taking 20 months because we started to like it got bigger in terms of like we weren't didn't want to just shoot in the same area. We wanted to go to California or Arizona or whatever. And that to me, Gruesome, that was film school. That was like once you are have shot 13 feature films, you really kind of feel like you faced almost everything. You've almost been arrested. You've had to, cast people on set. One movie is a psychosexual thriller, and a movie stars only puppets. You've dealt with kids. You've dealt with old people. You've dealt with, cats. And it's just it after. That experience just kind of informs you, and you can kind of be like, okay, I can handle anything. I am ready for whatever you got.
Amen. And as a podcaster, when you first get started off, you have to pay for these damn podcast sites, and that gets expensive.
Oh,
So
sure.
I had to make some changes quickly. So, I found that later on in life, I found this that Anchor is a free podcasting site. Believe it or not, it's free. It's owned by Spotify.
Right.
And cool. I mean, you get on the platforms, and then I thought, man, how do I get my audio podcast on YouTube? Well, I figured it out. They have a tool that allows you add one photo to your review or interview, it turns it into an MP4.
Right.
But I moved to the YouTube platform about 2 months. I've had the YouTube for 13 years. I really didn't use it, you know? So in the last 2 months, those interviews and reviews I told you about, I uploaded them one by one. It took me over a month or longer to get them all in there.
Right.
What a job that was. But you know what? It took off so fast. I did a review called Ice Sharks. I mean, there's a lot of shark movies, okay? A lot of them. But I love that shit. I can't help myself, okay? I posted that thing, and it had 1,400 hits in a day and a half.
There you go.
So the trick of the trade is find the best artwork possible for the movie.
Right.
And people latch on. It's like clickbait, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. My wife and I, we started a podcast probably about 5 or 6 months ago. So we're very young to the game. It's called Married to Movies. And we create these like little minute clips from each podcast. And those get so much, many more hits. And you add a video element to it. Because one of the things that we were talking about is that, you remember like a couple of weeks ago, people were talking about Martin Short. And there was wrote the opinion piece and said, can we all stop pretending Martin Short is funny? And when we were talking about it on the minute clip, my wife found video of Martin Short's old Ed Grimley cartoon. Yeah. And when people were listening to us talk about how awesome Martin Short is and how, you know, that guy was just looking for clickbait. And then they were seeing the Ed Grimley cartoon at the same time. It got, you know, it got a ton of views and, you know, it definitely, you know, got the interest. So yeah, combining the visual element and something that people are kind of already interested in and talk about, like ice sharks. Why wouldn't people be excited about ice sharks? It's a great combo.
Well, and the thing about that movie is it wasn't horribly done either. I mean, it was what they did was it can easily happen. I mean, I don't know about a shark jumping out of the water into on the ice, but I mean, if you watch that movie, I mean, I liked it. It was, I thought it was going to be corny and goofy, but it wasn't.
Well, that's the thing is there's really no connection between how good a movie is and how much a movie cost, you know, and the quality of a film comes from, you know, the quality of the filmmaker, you know, the quality of the story, who he has acting in it, the script, all of these things. And a script, you know, a better script doesn't cost any more than a worse script. That's one of the things I learned in the beginning of my filmmaking career. I was just a producer on extraordinarily low budget horror movies. And what I learned was that it didn't matter how good my producing was. If the script was not up to snuff, it was going to be a total crap movie. So then I realized, okay, so I think I would do better making my own movies and using my production skills for those as opposed to, trying to make somebody else's dream.
The industry, as far as podcasting, can be very challenging, but it also can be very fun because it's just a matter of, you know, I've realized, I think one of the downers that I deal with sometimes is if a filmmaker is going to spend their time to send them their movie for you to review, the least they could do is promote it.
Right.
And a lot of them don't.
Right. Well, that's
frustrating.
That is that, you know, gruesome. That's the thing that you learn in this business is that, you know, honestly, the easiest thing to do is actually make the movie. It's the getting everything together, getting the money together, promoting it, finding someplace for your film, finding a way to get money back on your film. I mean, that's really the business. The making of the movie is like the most fun and and honestly, you know, not just the most satisfying part, but on some levels, the easiest part.
I mean, I understand the business because I'm in the business too, as you know, a voice actor and did some voice acting for some trailers and just acting myself. So I get the behind the scenes bit, but I enjoy it. You know, I enjoy watching movies. I enjoy, you know, reviewing them. And there are some filmmakers out there, their films they make, I just can't get myself to watch them, because it's one thing to just keep making movies, and but there has to be some kind of quality behind it, if you know what I mean.
There was a segment of especially if we're talking about the horror community, that that the fact that it is sort of quality and bad acting and bad special effects, and sort of this like Ed Woodism to it, that really, you know, they embrace that. And more power to them, but that's not really, you know, that's not really my thing. I want to try to make a movie that looks like, you know, Netflix made it or Hollywood made it or whatever, but, you know, I made it for pennies compared to dollars.
Right. I mean, when I say what I said is I'm talking about how, I'm not going to mention the filmmaker's name because he does it on purpose, and I get that. There's a couple of them. But if I'm going to watch a shark movie, for instance.
Okay. Are we talking about you?
Or if I'm going to watch a...
Dinosaur movie?
Yes. I can handle the dinosaurs on, you know, the blue screen or whatever. I can handle that.
You know, gruesome, the most important thing is I just want to see effort. I want to see that you made an effort, you know, actors, you made an effort with your script, you made an effort with, you know, and I can look at my films and I can be incredibly critical of them. I, you know, my first 13 movies, I would say 4 of them are really watchable. You know, it's just, but it's a process, you know, and you grow in it. But I don't subscribe to the idea of it. So, you know, I think you have to try to be making something good. And I want to see somebody saying something with their movie. Okay, you can do a movie about, you know, sharks, you know, and ice or whatever, and you could still have some kind of a point or some sort of an idea that you're trying to get across.
I guess what I'm trying to say is this person I'm talking about puts out like 3 movies a year.
Right.
It's one thing if Joe Davis had made a movie and the acting wasn't that great, I can accept that. But if you're making movies all the time and it's the same thing, you're not being, you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if it's constantly like that.
Absolutely. Like I was watching this movie I'd never seen before. And it was from, I think it was from like the 90s or 2000s or something like that. And it was called Dark Waters. And
yes,
it was very much trying to be a Mario Bava, you know, Argento. It was, you know, this director obviously really wanted to do his version of, you know, a giallo. You know, they really wanted to do something like that. And, you know, it was beautiful. I was stunned by the cinematography. It was gorgeous. You know, the acting was fine. You know, actually it was better than a lot of Argento movies. But you got to the very, very, very end of the film. And they obviously just ran out of money when it came to the special effects that they were trying to pull off. And, you know, and all of a sudden, what had been really a striking, you know, almost like a moving painting, almost like, you know, what Ari Aster or Robert, you know, or Eggers has been pulling off, it made it look bad. You know, it just, and but I still really enjoyed the film. It was just like that one little last 15 minute piece did not measure up to the whole hour and a half that had come before that. And that's a very, you know, a very big thing in filmmaking is sort of like evening everything out so that people start, they're watching the story and they're not watching the movie. They're not watching the movie making.
Right, right. Like Tubi TV is a prime example of where I get a lot of movies to watch I never even heard of that are good ones, right?
Oh, yes. It's
so
it's shocking too how many movies with real big names and stars. It was like there was a period of time like when Blockbuster closed and it was between Blockbuster and kind of like the streaming services where all the movies were getting made but not actually getting theatrical releases. And I think there's probably like half a dozen Harvey Keitel films that I'd never even heard of before. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, he was, he had kids to feed, he had cocaine to buy. I mean, you know, this is, he had to do some films, you know? Oh my God. My wife brought up Birdemic. Birdemic could be, in my view, the worst film I've ever
seen. It is ridiculous.
On every level. I mean, it's like The Room, you know, and I almost feel like the only way to do something that is sort of that truly awful is that they were trying to make something that they thought was good. Sort of like Tommy Wiseau did with The Room. Oh my God. I mean, here's what happened, Gruesome. Okay, so my wife will play Tubi movies because she always has to have something going. Wait, what are you saying, babe? Oh, she says it's on Peacock. Tracy, you should come in and join us. She says she's working. She's editing right now. Yeah, exactly. So here's what happened, Gruesome. Every night, my wife was like playing movies on Tubi. And I would wake up in the middle of the night and something was playing. I didn't know what it was, but it kept happening over and over again. And it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. And I asked my wife, what is this unbelievable piece of shit that is waking me up in the middle of the night every night? Because because Tubi, the movies just keep playing. And then she showed it to me and she said it was Birdemic. And I was like, it was invading my psyche, Gruesome.
Well, you mentioned about Tubi, right? This is, you know, they make the artwork better than the movie in most of these movies, okay? The covers, right? So I said, oh, this is a cool title. And when I clicked on it and when I see who the filmmaker was, never mind. Because I know I'm getting myself into it. It's not gonna be what I thought it is.
Well, here's the thing about the movie for me. It's just like once we get to the unbelievably terrible bird CGI or you know, whatever.
Whatever you call it.
Yeah, whatever you call it. That's actually I'm relieved because then I don't have to watch the acting. I mean, the acting is like Troll 2 quality. It really is. What's that one about the alien that McDonald's made, Mac and Me? You know, yeah, Mac and another one of the like unbelievably terrible movies was on yesterday, and I like watched a little bit of it. Do you remember the movie with Pierce Brosnan called Nomads?
Yes.
Oh man.
Oh my God. You know, bad movies are only good if it's a filmmaker's first film or, you know, they don't have anything. But when they purposely make them bad,
yeah.
Well, except for Birdemic, that was the dumbest movie I've ever seen. I didn't last. Oh, my. So when I saw the birds, I'm done.
No, dude. I mean, it really is staggering. it's like every level to miss it on cinematography, on script, on every single level. It is just the most wretched thing I've ever seen. So there you go. That's my review of Birdemic, folks.
Well, before I'm gonna talk about some films that you did, but before we do that, sure. You know, TikTok's been around for how long now, right?
Right.
And I never even thought about this. I'm thinking, well, if I'm able to put my reviews on YouTube, I should be able to put them on TikTok.
Yeah.
I have you're not gonna believe this. All my reviews, not all of them. It's gonna take a while to get them all in there. I'm on TikTok as well. All my reviews. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. People like, you know, my wife is a huge advocate for TikTok. She gets a lot of her news on there, and yeah, and it's funny because I watched the movie Pump Up the Volume, and at the end of the movie, you know, Christian Slater says, you know, take the air, you know, and my wife pointed out, and she said that's kind of what's happened. You know, people took airwaves. They took it with their podcast. They took it with TikTok. They took it with Instagram, you know, and people and becoming influencers. You know, they took it with OnlyFans, you know, they really, you know, they took things and they made them their own. And they made them personal, and I think that's really interesting. That Happy Harry Hardon was seeing the future so well.
So I was watching the numbers on TikTok, and my goodness, I mean, I just started it. I have 245 followers, but I mean, I'll get messages every day like, "Good one, great, thank you." It's like, wow, people are actually paying attention.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so that helped out. I'm on Instagram, as you mentioned. I'm on there as well.
There's also,
of course, Spotify and all that, but
also Snapchat. Get on there too.
I'm on Snapchat, but I can try that. I haven't even tempted that yet. But the problem with Snapchat is that it goes away. It doesn't stick around.
Right.
That's my problem.
Okay. She's like, you can do Snapchat three ways, and one of the ways it takes away. Trey, she can't. She had gruesome. She's working. She cannot come out here. Oh my god, that's funny. So yeah, so it's amazing when you are working with your wife, because we write together. She shoots, she edits, I direct, and I produce. On our next film, we're going to be co-directing it together for the first time. And it's a sci-fi film. I'm raising money for it right now. It's Sky Valley. Wait, she's coming. Tracy's coming. This is Gruesome Herzog.
Hi.
This one's actually going to be, we're going to shoot it in New Mexico. Yeah, yeah, yeah. New Mexico has some great incentives, and it's a sci-fi film, and but very much, you know, personal story. And yeah, we're.
Well, but yeah.
The genesis of the idea of the finale was we were actually watching Encounters of the Third Kind, which is, and I just being really frustrated at it, and Richard Dreyfuss is saying this means something, and. Blows his family apart, tears his house up, and brings shrubs inside, and is building the Devil's Tower. And finally, John pauses it, and he goes, "What is the problem? Do you not want to watch the movie anymore?" And I said, "It's just really pissing me off, because we're sitting here with Richard Dreyfuss, and the whole time I'm just wondering about, what is this mom going through? Because we saw her kid go out the kitchen door into the spaceship. And what the hell is it like? Like, who cares about this reoccurring thought he's having? Her kid got abducted by aliens."
So, right. So we were kind of like, okay, well, we'll just do that movie.
Well, John goes,
we'll just make the movie that Steven Spielberg didn't make.
Right. John goes, well, is make that movie then.
Yeah. So, so in our, so we have her, you know, girl abducted, and then the most of the movie is how does she get her back? Like, what would you,
what do?
What would you do if,
oh, yeah,
if you were, and you can't go to the police, you can't, you know, you don't want to base them to think that you, you know, like had a, something to do with, well, you know, yeah, her disappearance.
A dingo ate your baby.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, it's all that energy. And so, and she, you know, she had to try to do things on her own.
And they did prove a dingo did eat that baby.
Yes, that's true. They did recently prove that a dingo did eat that baby. That is correct. I don't think that that has anything to do with what we're talking about, Tracy, but that's
Meryl
okay.
Street.
Yeah, exactly. This is just like, Bruce, this is just like our podcast, Tracy and I kind of like, you know, bantering back and forth and sometimes semi-arguing.
Yeah.
That makes it fun, though, see?
Oh, absolutely.
I would call it marital debate.
Yes, yes.
Oh, from, God.
From bliss to miss.
So whose idea was the creepy crawling?
Creeping crawling.
Mine.
Wait, hang on.
Don't.
Hang on.
Mine.
No, that is not what happened. Okay. So what happened was there are multiple stories in Creeping Crawling. And one of the stories was an experience that Tracy had, which was our house.
Wait a minute.
What are you talking about?
Okay. Our house. Okay. This guy went to the store. You could walk around the block and go to the store. And he came back with like a jug of milk, which he was supposed to get.
We lived in the hood.
And in the bag, in a bag he handed me, he had found a kitten. We had a crazy cat lady, and this kitten was just loose in the street. So he picked it up and brought it home. And I'm like,
oh.
I don't like cats.
Yes, but he was adorable.
It was. I don't know if it was a he or a she. And so I'm like, okay, fine.
We're
so,
definitely not cat people if we don't know if it's a he or a she.
Yeah, I don't know. So I was like, okay, I just can't. I can't. I don't like this cat. Like, I'm in my house. I'm like, just take it back to the crazy cat lady's house. Well, when he did that, we found out that it had fleas, and now that the fleas had nothing to eat on, they ate on me, and it drove me insane.
Yes.
It literally affected my mental health to the point where...
We got really badly infested with fleas to the point where you would have to, like, jump in, like... run and jump in bed.
I was sleeping with, like, duct tape around, like, everything. So,
oh my God,
basically I sent John out to buy some shit to kill the fleas. And, while he was gone, I came up with the idea that this girl would be like taking care of this comatose guy. And she would start like having these weird experiences, and she would actually, it would be fleas, but she would be poisoning herself and driving herself mad, treating the fleas. And then she thought this comatose dude was waking up and she was in love with him.
Don't give the whole story away.
It's
but
fine.
Yes, yes.
It's been out for
years. A very long movie. It's a very old movie.
And then I said, and there's actually a thing called formicophilia, which is a thing where people are sexually aroused by bugs. And I'm like, so that could be a story. And then I think I just need one other story. You know, it could be an anthology.
Right, right. So we were thinking of, so basically the concept was like, okay, so the movie is going to be about sort of people's, their personal psychological reactions to different kinds of insects. And that's where the stories are going to come from.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it was,
it's super famous in China.
It's very, it's a very,
oh yeah.
Some people would call it fetishy.
Yeah. Well, somebody actually said it was feminist horror, which I loved because that's exactly what we were going for. But yeah, we have a brother-in-law in China, and he called us up at like 2 in the morning one night and said, hey, do you know that like Creeping Crawling has like 50 million views on the Chinese YouTube? And we're like, no.
That's funny.
But no money.
No money.
No money from, you know.
No, I know.
Yeah, yeah, with 50 million views. But, the thing I find interesting about horror, gruesome, and why I'm always fascinated by it is that when you sort of take the horrors of life in general, and then you sort of subvert those and add that little bit of the supernatural.
Well, that's the best part of The Exorcist.
Right.
That's the first part. The things that they're doing to her in the hospital are just as gruesome as the things the demon does later.
Right. So actually there's a scene in Creeping Crawling where the father is trying to get his daughter to lose weight and asks her to, tells her that she needs to drink pee to do that. And that actually was a literal scene with someone that we knew. And they had told the story that my father made me drink pee to try to lose weight. So when you take those elements that, are people's personal horrors, and then you add, a weird tapeworm into it like we did, which is funny. Right now on American Horror Stories, they are advertising a story about someone who swallowed a tapeworm to try to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, it happens.
So where did Little Bi Peep come from?
Little Bi Peep was really interesting. Well, the actress that was in that story about the fleas, her name is Anna Shields, and you can look her up. She's had like, I think, 3 or 4 on Shudder that she has now written and acted in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's been doing really, really well for herself. Definitely somebody you should have on the show. Anna Shields is a great friend of ours. But she had sent me a script for a movie, and it was a horror movie. And I read it, and I was kind of like, I was very honest with her. And I said, this is not you, really. I mean, this doesn't have any of who you are in the script. You tell me just unbelievably funny and crazy stories about, being a bisexual woman and, dating men and dating women and lying to them and, trying to get away with everything. And it's hilarious. And I was like, why don't you tell that story? Because that's amazing.
That's a story that nobody.
Right. A little by Peep, she wrote that script
really fast
in about 3 weeks and sent it to us.
That was great.
And we added some like probably more surreal touches to it, and some of the weird stuff to it. But that movie, Gruesome, was made for $800.
And, oh, wow!
In like 8 days.
Yeah, 8 days, and it has. I mean. People love it, and it's had millions and millions and millions of views.
It's been translated into other languages.
In other languages, and it actually now just got picked up again after 7 years.
In distribution.
It's going to go back into distribution again. I mean, it just works because it's funny, it's strange, it's a little bit.
Is that available anywhere?
I love the reviews like on Amazon or something, anytime on those streaming platforms where people can write reviews. I love it because people will watch it and say, well, it was a pretty cool, funny movie, but there's no hits in it. Cause like everybody expects it.
So there's a message for you folks. Name your comedy or drama after a porn and you get more views.
Yeah. I think we've been into watching it the most part.
Now, you also made a documentary, right? Echoes from the Neighborhood That Disappeared? Where'd that come from?
Well, The Neighborhood That Disappeared was a story by a friend of ours named Mary Paley. And she had been working for a long time on a this basically the documentary of the destruction of the Albany, the center of Albany, when Rockefeller built the Empire State Plaza.
Which strange monstrosity.
Yes. Very brutalist architecture. Looks like something from, you know, Hitler's Fourth Reich is basically what it looks like. And so she had been working on the documentary, but
they had a rough cut.
Yeah, they had it. It really just, it ended up on the local PBS, but we were heavily involved in the editing of it with her and kind of getting it to a place where, you know, all of its true personality. And the movie was so successful that I came in and co-directed the sequel to that. And then I also co-directed another documentary with her after. So it was, you know, making documentaries is a completely different experience than narratives, because really the editing is the directing of the movie.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a really very satisfying experience, and you know, it had a lot of social commentary to it. You know, we always try, you know, in our own films, you know, our own beliefs and our own personalities and our own politics and religion and all, they always eventually come out anyway.
Well, I mean, hell, we're writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to do whatever the crap we want, right?
Right.
I don't know if we can say that.
Well said.
Gruesome, can we say the F word is what Tracy's asking?
Yeah, sure.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. There we go.
If I'm like weeks writing this thing, it's going to be what the fuck I want it to be.
I like it.
So here's one for you. So what other fucking movies did you make?
Well, there are, Tracy had a script that she wrote pretty much on her own called The Night We Met. And that is a kind of like a John Hughes romance type thing.
Yeah.
There's one called Hobo Jesus, which is a kind of a hip, spiritual,
hippie Jesus,
hippie of, spiritual we
don't
movie.
Know, well, you don't know if he's like a grifter or like, you know, anointed. You have
yeah.
no idea.
And then we have two films that are coming out. One of them is called Girl in the Palms. That was a road movie.
Psychedelic road movie.
Psychedelic Christmas road movie.
There you go.
Shit.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. Well, what
shot in Florida?
Well, Gruesome, what happened was we had another project fall through.
And John was like weeping.
I was not weeping.
He was weeping.
And there was no
crying.
Okay, I might right. Anyway.
And so he was really, really depressed that we couldn't pull this film off. And he's like, you know, I've worked on this for like a year and it's just like it's devastating.
Yeah,
like,
I had to give them money back.
Yeah,
that's so, the worst part is
getting, yeah right
yeah
so he was we were just like outside on the porch having coffee and stuff, and he was like, you know, I saw a painting that was really inspiring on Facebook today, and he showed it to me and he goes, you know, doesn't that painting look like a movie, like a movie, that's a movie I would want. It was a girl,
it was like tropical, it was bright colors,
it's a beautiful girl.
It reminded me of like the artwork of Nagal.
Yeah,
Nagal in the 80s. You know, it looked like a Duran Duran.
I'm like, you know? Okay, like, let's make that movie then.
Right.
And the painting, I think, was called Girl in the Palm.
That was the name of the painting, was Girl in the Palm. And I was like, that's a great name. And I looked,
asked the painter,
right?
Hey, can we, you know, make a movie off of the inspiration of this painting? They were like, sure.
So we basically, using the idea of a painting, we knew it was going to be called Girl in the Palms. We knew it was going to be tropical. We knew it was going to be about the girl. And we formed a story that very, very loosely of basically her traveling.
We actually only had about 45 pages of that script, period. Because right in the middle of writing it, my dad, we found out he had cancer, and I was upset and or gone helping out with him for the whole pre-production period. So I didn't help write on it. And we just kind of said, okay, well, here's some scenarios where we know we need to get to. And the night before, we'd be like, okay, how the fuck do we get there?
Yeah, I mean, Grusman, we
don't know what order the scenes were. Well,
and Grusman was kind of like, I know someone who has a horse farm.
I know a guy with a sailboat.
Right, I know a guy with a sailboat. How do we get her to the horse
farm?
How
do we get him there?
How do we get her to the sailboat? And that was what the whole film was.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that one's coming out in January. It already went through its festival run. And then we're starting a festival run with a movie called Wheelies Inc., which is a family film. It was like a movie about these teen bike riders, and they're doing wheelies, and they end up having to solve a mystery, like sort of like Scooby-Doo type thing. And
nice.
Yeah, and that was fun too. That was great. I was very much inspired by like Encyclopedia Brown.
And Gleaming the Cube.
Sure. Gleaming the Cube meets Encyclopedia Brown. That's what Wheelies Inc. is.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then there's the sci-fi one, you know, coming up.
And we have like, I don't know, 8 different scripts.
Yeah. We've got a bunch of scripts. I mean, you know, you've always got like your big, crazy Battlestar Galactica giant movie that will probably never happen. You've always got that script. And, you know, and you have like, you know, smaller scripts. And I've got like an idea for a series. And, you know,
recently, though, like a couple of times, I think there were 2 movies that came out recently. And because they came out, we were like, well, that's pretty close to the script that we were writing. So that I have to get dumped.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing. If you don't make your movie, somebody else will make your movie.
Well,
right.
You know, idea is out there. The soil is perfect. And if you can't pull it off, somebody else is going to plant that thing and it's going to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I heard a Rick Rubin quote that was something to that effect. And I believe in something I call the idea cloud. And you pull an idea down from the idea cloud, and then you don't know how many other people pulled it down. It's a race to see who gets there first.
Interesting.
Don't get there first.
Nope. Sometimes you don't got the money.
Yep. Amen on that. Cool. I mean, you have a lot of talent there.
Well, thanks.
I'm just looking forward to seeing some more stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you know, I truly believe, and this isn't everything, but I just believe that there is a voice that my wife and I have. There are things that we say that are not being said and are, you know, not being seen. So that is the, you know, that's why I always feel like I have to find a way to start speaking to the universe. You know, that's why I make movies. That's my way of talking to God, you know, yelling at God, you know, and there's a pressure in that too, because if you don't do it, if you don't get your film made, that's a conversation. That's a thing that did not have a chance to exist. And that's your responsibility.
Yeah, right. Right. Is there anything else you want to chat about? Any other good stuff?
I did have a script downloaded. I was like just fully asleep and I woke up with the idea. I had been pitched the film by 2 things in my dream, 2 entities. And they described everything and they kind of pitch it to me. They'd show me what was happening in the movie. And it's be like, see, wouldn't this make a great movie? And I woke up with facts that I had no idea how to do, because I don't know anything about World War II. I don't know anything about the kind of car or the town or Amelia Earhart, or I don't know any of the facts that they were spewing at me. And I woke up and I just started Googling shit. Oh, well, this is a weird supernatural thing that has happened, so I guess I should start writing this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy the way, you know, films sort of can come to you, and the way that, you know, you.
Oh, one of my favorite ideas you ever had for a film. You said that you had pitched it to Sean Penn in a dream.
Yeah.
And he had said, "That sounds like a real movie, man. I'm behind you."
I mean, everybody likes it, Sean, you know. So, it. You know, there you go.
Astral projection. Yes, Sean, yes. Penn.
The Sean Penn that lives in my brain thought it was a good idea.
It
for
is
a
great idea. Nobody else has pulled it.
Exactly. Well, you know, gruesome. You know, only other thing that we would say is that we do the Married to Movie podcast, and you can find it kind of on anything that has podcasts. And it's
or video.
Yeah, and it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, sometimes we'll just talk about.
I'm on Pinterest.
I mean,
yeah, I don't know who the hell looks at Pinterest for this, but okay.
Like, you know, we watch movie. Like, okay, so here's what happened, Groot. Maybe you'll understand.
Wait,
this.
Is this the Nun?
The Nun story. Oh, God. Okay. So we got really excited. We wanted to see The Nun 2.
No, not because The Nun was so amazing.
No, it
was shitty. No, I just wanted, like, The Nun 2 looked like it had the possibility of being kind of spooky.
Right. So
better than the first one.
We saw that, oh, okay, it looked like it was streaming for free.
On Prime. So I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, we're going to hold movie night. Like, you know, snacks. We're gonna have
I went out and bought all of the ingredients to make homemade
pimento cheese. I just had a craving.
I had about 5 different kinds of candy. I mean, we were really
getting
ready. Okay.
We were ready.
That's right.
At lunch, we watched the first Nun, which was still not good.
This was the equivalent of heavy petting, gruesome. I mean, we were ready to rock with this movie.
And The Nun 2 came hard right out the gate. Okay. I'm like, okay.
I like we went from heavy petting to coming hard.
And so then at 8 minutes in, it cuts off. And come to find out, it was an 8-minute preview.
It was a preview, gruesome.
And then they wanted to make you pay $20 to watch it. And I got so mad.
It was such a con.
As far as the nun part of it, it's good that they kept it the same way. You don't see her much. It's what's other stuff.
Yeah. Right.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy good, in my opinion.
Oh, that's awesome. Good. Wow, there we go. Well, nice. We really do enjoy all of the Conjuring movies. I think the Conjuring movies
are
wonderful.
I'm obsessed with the warmth. Like, I've been obsessed with them, I don't know, for 30 or 40 years. Ed and Lorraine are, I'm sad that, like, I think they're both dead at this point, but I'm sad about that. And I've actually wanted to go to the museum. I just freaking love the Warrens.
I was at a gas station in Florida.
No, in Albany.
No, was it? It was in Albany. I was at a gas station, and it apparently was Vera Farmiga's husband.
Yeah, he just looked like he had to be famous. So John walks up to him and goes, "Hey, man, are you famous or something?" And he goes, "Well, no, I'm not really that famous, but my wife is." And he goes, "Who's your wife?" And is it Vera Farmiga? "Oh, yeah, we know."
Yeah.
Independent filmmaker, you just have to take every shot you can possibly have. Like, Stephen Lang is someone who lives very close to where we used to live in Albany.
I have to say, though, that's like a talent you have. You, like, you can smell, like, something about, okay, they are somebody. Because, like, one time we were on a plane and John says, "Hey, don't look, but right behind you, I'm pretty sure that's Aaron Neville." And I'm like, "Fuck you." I look back and I'm like, "Hey."
Okay. I don't think that that's really, you know, a good example, because if anyone has ever seen Aaron Neville, the guy with the tattoos on his face is Aaron Neville.
Yeah.
No, he had tattoos on his face, though. And I look, that guy is like, he's got tattoos. Yeah. So he's like, turns around, he goes, "Aaron Neville, what are you doing flying Southwest?" And Aaron Neville's like, "Well, you know, man, everybody's got to save money."
I mean, Aaron Neville's a big dude, man. And, man, they ain't got no fucking leg room on Southwest. I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty bad. It's not like as bad as Spirit, but it's pretty bad. So, you know, yeah, somebody needs to, you know, help out Aaron Neville and get him some more money and get him on Virgin or something.
Yeah. He's a good singer.
Oh, amazing. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Gruesome. Yeah, please check out the Married to Movies podcast. And
yeah. The link so we can share this podcast on our podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Let's be incestuous with our podcast. Let's get some dirty, dirty podcast sex happening.
A lot. I did a lot. In 2013 alone, I did 5 podcasts.
Wow. That's amazing. So, couple of people that I want to recommend you reach out to, and I'll let them know that you'll be doing it. A guy by the name of Scott Hansen. Did you see a movie called Bad Candy?
Yeah, I love Bad Candy.
Scott Hansen is the director of that, and I was AD on a film that he was cinematographer on.
Yeah. Oh, does he know about Goldberg?
No. Yeah. No. And the other one, I was the AD on this movie called The First Hills that Kelly Yeah. So The Forest Hills is a werewolf movie, and that's coming out, and Shelley Duvall's in it. Yeah, man. It was crazy. Scott Goldberg. He just found a way to contact the guy that is basically Shelley's boyfriend ever since Fairy Tale Theater. And this guy actually also was in the Breakfast Club with Madonna, you know, Madonna's band before she went solo. Yes. And Shelley lives in Texas, and he was able to convince her to basically do small cameos in the movie.
I'm having a hard time getting a hold of him. Ask John.
Oh.
Will you see if you can get Shelley Duvall at all? She never answers when we call. So John just, like, you know, he's a bulldog. He just kept calling and kept calling. One day she just randomly picked up, and she was driving to her favorite restaurant, which was closed. And so she sat in the parking lot and talked to John instead. And he was like, you know, she's like, "Well, I don't know. Why would I want to do this? And, you know, people won't care." And, you know, she has some health issues. And John was just like, "Look, it's your comeback. Like, it could be huge. People love you, you know." And he had a great conversation with her. And she started answering the phone, you know, and she started considering it. And everybody else, you know, Goldberg, everybody, you know, really worked to make it comfortable for her.
They went to Texas and filmed in her house so that she wouldn't have to deal with, you know, getting on a plane and, you know, doing all that. And basically made it very, very easy for her. Yeah. But, man, you want to talk about press. It went around the world.
People love
it. Was Shelley. Like there was a thing in People magazine about it. There was
it was on Fox News.
Entertainment Tonight did a story about it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
crazy. Shelley Duvall, I love Shelley.
Yeah, and Shelley and the movie had a premiere at Spod Castle at Kevin Smith's theater. And while we were there, Shelley was like on the Zoom, and she was telling stories about like Robert Altman and you know all shit.
Well, you know, we really have to like love value actors, you know, of that age and of that ilk, because you know they actually, if we access them stories, they're carrying the of a period in film
right. That
when they pass will be gone.
Right.
We won't know.
I had that one other experience that was sort of like that, which was I was had a friend, and she said, I am going to a party in the Hollywood Hills. Can you pick up somebody and take them to the party? And you can go to the party too. And I was like, well, I mean, I just have a rental car and I don't know anybody or I don't know the area. And she was like, well, you know, just GPS it. You'll figure it out. I really need somebody to pick her up. And I'm like, okay, sure. And it was Karen Black. So I was like Karen Black's Uber driver. And we went to this party in the Hollywood Hills at Bob Dylan's son's wife's house. And and Quincy Jones' son was there. And it was just an amazing night. And Karen Black gave me a beet recipe and told me she didn't like that I wore cowboy hats because I wasn't a cowboy.
But she wore your hat.
Yeah, she passed away now.
Yeah, she did. She passed away, and it was a sad day. And it was like having an opportunity, you know, to be with some, you know, a legend like that. I mean, especially in horror, I absolutely love I'm trying to think of the name of the
Burnt Offerings. I'm married to you.
That's right.
For 21 years.
Burnt Offerings is a masterpiece.
It's so good.
Yep.
And the Trilogy of Terror.
Trilogy of Terror is great too.
That the Trilogy of Terror with her with the little guy. That is why I have a fear of shit with my feet.
Yeah.
I saw that as a child and was just like traumatized instantly.
Well, it also might be the fleas that got on your feet too.
I also used to have a cat.
Oh God.
Take swipes at me.
Well, when Karen Black passed away, I posted the article in my blog, and her son reached out to me to thank me for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What is her son in the business?
I don't think he is, but he just happened to be we happened to be Facebook friends and didn't know it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And if you hear of anybody that wants to invest in a sci-fi film, send them my way.
Yeah, bro, I will. Well, John, great talking to you.
Awesome, man.
Thanks, John.
Have fun.
Take care, buddy.
All right,
we'll see you.